All right, the next presentation is titled Thermal Weed Control for Turfgrass Management, Past Ideas Refined for Present Application, J.A. Hoyle, J.S. McElroy, E.A. Gortal, N. Tuarakavi, and J.A. Hoyle will be presenting from the University of Auburn.
Good morning. I'm Jared Hoyle from Auburn University. Today I'm going to talk a little bit about part of my PhD project at Auburn University. Presentation titled Thermal Weed Control for Turfgrass Management, Past Ideas Refined for Present Application. As we all know, fire is not a new technology. It's been around since cavemen, and it's even been used in agriculture. First utilized around the early 1900s for slash and burn. As populations increased, domestication of plants and animals needed to occur, and therefore we needed to clear land. So fire was utilized to clear this land, and as the agricultural revolution hit in about the 1950s, the first weed flamer was produced by Price McElmore. Price McElmore drove his tractor down the rows in his cotton fields to flame emerged weeds as he was using a bicycle pump with his legs to pump the kerosene out to produce enough pressure to ignite the flames. And as Bond et al. In 2007 said, early systems of flame weeding were relatively crude and even possibly dangerous, as McElmore presented. But now, there are many modernized flame weed control methods. But for application in turfgrass systems, we looked at these past experiences and realized that there is no selectivity between the turf species and the weed species that we're looking at. So our initial field studies, we went out and we had to go and apply these thermal treatments before establishing turfgrass systems. And as a small graph here, on the y-axis we see a percent change in number of carpet weed per meter squared. And on the x-axis we see some of the treatments that we utilized in this first initial field study. Solarization, a thermal treatment where we utilize clear polyethylene plastic to cover the soil for 42 days, trapping radiant heat from the sun, decreased this carpet weed species. Emerged flame weeding, where weeds were emerged out of the soil surface and then flamed off, decreased weed populations. And direct soil flaming, where we went out and tilled the soil and directly flamed the moist soil tilled, actually increased carpet weed, where we believe that we broke dormancy in some of these seeds. So we decreased weed populations in the field by these thermal treatments, but we must refine these for present application as there are many factors that influence thermal weed control. For example, the weed species itself, the thermal mortality temperature that these weed species seeds have to achieve before they become not able to be germinated. The exposure period and the exposure temperature of the flame unit to these weed species. The seed bank depth in the soil that can be influenced by soil texture. The thermal conductivity of the soil that can be influenced by soil texture and soil moisture. And along with actual heat transfer of the thermal unit. First, we will go through the weed species thermal mortality and the exposure period and exposure temperature. We utilized three weed species, large crabgrass, Virginia buttonweed, and coxcomb calinga, in a 2x7 factorial design with a 5 and 20 second exposure period. And this is actually temperatures 60 to 250, not zeros. We didn't freeze them, we heated them. We used two ovens. We heated crucibles to the treatment temperature, pulled the crucibles out, placed a fixed number of seed into the crucibles. Crucibles went into another oven that was at the exposure temperature and then placed in there for the specific amount of time and removed. Then we put them in petri dishes with two number two filter paper, 6 milliliters of DI water, and placed into a grow chamber at a photo period of 16 day, eight hour night with 30 and 20 degrees Celsius. And we did germination counts. And these germination counts were converted to mortality. We did a nonlinear sigmoidal regression model to predict the 50 and 90% mortality of these weed species. And as we see, with the increase in exposure period, we see a decrease in temperature needed. And also we see there's a variation between weed species, as large crabgrass is less susceptible or is more susceptible to heat as coxcomb calinga and Virginia buttonweed. But now we'll move on to seed bank depth. We utilized the same weed species in this study. We looked at the planting depth effects and soil texture in another factorial with three soil textures, a sand, loamy sand, and a clay loam. Sand was a 85-15% sand peat mixture. Loamy sand was a Marvin loamy sand, and a clay loam was a Sumter silty clay. And we utilized depths 0 on surface to 8 centimeters. Soils were gravimetrically weighed and packed into soil columns, which was in 2.5-inch PVC pipe with germination cloth duct taped to the bottom to prevent soil loss. Once soil was applied into the soil column to the planting depth, we placed the seeds inside evenly spaced and then packed soil above. We wanted to ensure the bulk density was consistent for all soils. We utilized 1.5 grams per centimeter cubed. We then conducted emergence counts weekly, and we converted them to depth inhibition. And we did this relative to the soil surface. So at each increasing depth, you had inhibition. And what we see here on the y-axis of this matrix of grass, we have percent inhibition or depth inhibition. And on the x-axis, we have the depth. To achieve 100% inhibition of large crabgrass, it was very consistent over each soil texture. Greater than 8 centimeters was required for 100%, as 8 centimeters was our maximum depth in sand and loamy sand. But in a clay loam, 8 centimeters ceased emergence. 4 centimeters for sand, loamy sand, and clay loam achieved 100% depth inhibition for coxcomb calinga. And for Virginia buttonweed, we saw a high variation with 8 centimeters in a clay loam, 4 centimeters in a sand, and then never achieved 100% inhibition in a loamy sand. Now, as we move on to soil thermal conductivity, we utilized soil texture and soil moisture in a factorial design to see the differences in thermal conductivities. We utilized the same soil, sand, loamy sand, and clay moisture, but we added two moisture contents, 0.1 and 0.2 volumetric water content. We used Chung and Jackson's methodology, where we assumed an infinite long cylinder. We used a copper cylinder. We placed the soils with the moisture contents in them. Had a thermal conductivity meter in the middle to record the temperatures. We placed them in two constant water baths, a hot and cold water bath, and determined the thermal diffusibility. Once we did the calculated the thermal diffusibility, we used the specific heat of the soils at each volumetric water content and determined thermal conductivity. On the y-axis here, we see thermal conductivity in watts per meter per Kelvin. On the x-axis, we see the soil textures that were utilized. And with the increase in sand content from a clay loam, loamy sand to sand, we see an increase in thermal conductivity as expected. And that is also with a decrease with clay content. And also, as expected, with the increase in water content, you also see an increase in thermal conductivity. But what about the actual heat transfer that we're seeing from the utilized flame weeder that we used in the first field experiment? We went out to the field and placed thermocouples in the soil, used the flame weeder as specified by the producer, in a loamy sand at 0.1 volumetric water content. We found that at two points that were 1 centimeter apart, we had an average temperature of 61 degrees Celsius and 37 degrees Celsius. So what does all this mean? To refine it for our present application, we take all these influencing factors. But we'll go through one kind of middle-of-the-road example, coxcomb calinga. To achieve 90% mortality, as said, it took 113 degrees C. The emergence depth was within the top 4 centimeters in a loamy sand soil. The loamy sand soil at 0.1 volumetric water content obtained a 0.96 watts per meter per Kelvin thermal conductivity. And the heat transfer from the thermal treatment unit that we were using at two different points 1 centimeter apart, utilized a 61 or obtained a 61 degree C and a 37 degree C. But we need to know the energy rate and surface temperature needed for effective coxcomb cladding control. So we're going to go back to a little basic soil physics here with Fourier's law. Q being the rate, thermal conductivity, temperature, and distance were all utilized. We used the thermal conductivity from the loamy sand at 0.96 watts per meter per Kelvin. The actual heat transfer at the observed temperatures from the thermal unit in the field, and the distance. And we see that the energy rate in the observed soil was 729.7 BTUs per hour per foot squared. But as we can go back to Fourier's law, insert the rate from the observed temperatures, the same thermal conductivity from before, a distance of maximum emergence of coxcomb Kalinga, and we use the change in temperature of surface temperature and desired temperature. Our desired temperature we needed to achieve was 113 degrees C, so we could go and calculate the surface temperature. So our required surface temperature was 207 degrees C or 405 degrees Fahrenheit. When we went back to the field, our actual surface temperature, 65.5 degrees C. So how do we increase the soil surface temperature? We can reduce application speed, but thermal treatment unit that we were utilizing was already going a half a mile an hour, so that's pretty slow. We can increase the fuel output, but as we've also seen, some of these thermal weed control methods have been very dangerous. But we can decrease the thermal heat travel distance. And I propose that this could be done by actually removing soil from the surface and passing through the flame. You increase the surface area of the flame to seed contact, which all leads to the development of new thermal treatment units and could be rationale for future research. I would like to acknowledge all my committee members, Turfgrass Research Unit managers, fellow graduate students, and undergraduate workers. And with that, I would like to entertain any burning questions that you may have. Yes.
You think global warming will affect the results?
The question was, do I believe global warming will affect the results? Well, as results from global warming have been inconclusive, I have no idea.
All right, the final presentation that was scheduled was actually canceled, so we have a break up until 10 o'clock when the next presentation will go off.